Chapter 8, Joshua. Evening, May 22, 1923. It had been a long time since Joshua McLaren had made sandwiches. It was, in fact, a long time since he'd prepared any kind of food. When his wife died, he'd taken it for granted that Nell would stay on in the house and take care of him and Callum. And when his younger brother died, he had also assumed that Nell would take care of Danny. He had never thought of any alternative, and Nell had never suggested one. Now he stood in Nell's kitchen, wondering where to begin. He assumed that a woman wouldn't want a great doorstop of a sandwich with thick slices of bread and hacked-up pieces of meat. A woman like Evangeline would probably eat tea sandwiches. Thinly sliced bread, perhaps a slice of cucumber or tomato, and a sliver of cheese. Joshua was accustomed to performing delicate carpentry, but when it came to handling kitchen tools, his skills deserted him. He fumbled with the unfamiliar kitchen knives and hoped sincerely that Nell would not return and find him at these unusual labors. She was acting strangely enough already. He had no idea what she would make of this. The McLarens owned a picnic basket, or at least they used to. When the boys were younger, Nell had taken them on picnics. He found the basket at the top of a cupboard, dusty with years of neglect. There had been no picnicking in the McLaren family for a long time. He wrapped the sandwiches in waxed paper and dropped them into the basket. Despite his best efforts, they were rather thick and uneven, of a slightly mangled appearance, but they were the best he could do. A couple of apples would be a good idea. Perhaps he should wash them. He remembered that his mother used to ask if the fruit had been washed. Women like to ask questions like that. If they weren't washed, she'd probably want to peel them or polish them or something, and he'd feel bad for her. Napkins. Nell wouldn't miss a couple of clean napkins or two from the sideboard. Or two glasses. He took the basket to his room and added the final touch. He had been keeping the scotch for a special occasion, and this was special enough. Originally, it had been for Callum, so that they could drink a toast when they were finally home together and the war was over. But not all of them had come home. He went down to the boat shed and enlisted Danny's help to finish Doogie Hamill's Lyman, and they hauled it down to the landing and launched it. The Lyman was a handsome craft, tugging at the end of her painter as if impatient to be back out on the lake. She surely deserved a better owner than Doogie Hamill, and that was a fact. "You want me to come out with you?" Danny asked. "No," said Joshua. "I'll go on my own." "Well, I'll just sit here and smoke a cigarette then," said Danny. "I'm not ready to go home and have supper with Miss Cornelia Braithwaite. You got a light?" "No," said Joshua. "Go home and smoke that." "It's too nice out here. What's in that picnic basket?" "Just a bit of supper. I'll not be home in time to eat with you. You can have Miss Braithwaite to yourself." "Maybe I'll stay here with you then," Danny said. Joshua shook his head. "There's not enough." "Oh, I don't know about that," Danny protested. He picked up the basket and felt its weight. "It's pretty heavy to me. What do you have in here?" Before Joshua could stop him, the boy had opened the lid. "What's all this?" he asked. "There's plenty of food here, and a bottle of whiskey. What are you up to, Uncle?" "Nothing," said Joshua. "Nothing at all. Go home, young man." "Not until I find out what you're up to, Uncle. This is far too fancy to be your supper." "No, it isn't," Joshua protested, feeling his face redden under his nephew's knowing eye. "And you've shaved," said Danny, "and put on a clean shirt?" "Give me the basket," Joshua growled, but Danny held it at arm's length. "Make me," he said, laughing. "I'll make you. Just see if I don't." Joshua lunged forward. Danny was laughing at him, and to his own surprise, Joshua was laughing back. "Come on, Uncle," Danny teased, and took off running the length of the dock, whooping with laughter, and Joshua chasing behind him until they both stood poised at the very end of the dock, with Danny dangling the basket over the water. Joshua knew that if he provoked Danny any further, the whole picnic would end up in the river. At that moment, he turned and saw Evangeline Murray stepping down onto the dock. She was wearing a white hat, her short red dress, a trace of perfume, and from the looks of things, very little else. "Good evening, Mr. McLaren," she said. "Good evening, Danny. I see that boys will be boys. It was nothing, Joshua stammered. It was just a bit of fun. Good evening, Mrs. Murray, Danny said. He handed the picnic basket to Joshua and winked at him. I think you'll be needing this, Uncle. I'll go home for my supper. Leaving so soon? Evangeline asked. Danny appeared to have trouble keeping a straight face. Oh, yes, I think I should be on my way. Don't you, Uncle? Yes, you certainly should, Joshua growled, but he couldn't help grinning at his nephew. Danny's thoughts were written all over his face. The boy was envious, and well, he should be. Evangeline Murray was looking totally delightful. Good night, Danny, Evangeline said. And a very good night to you too, ma'am, said Danny. Evangeline. Evangeline sat back in the stern of the runabout as the boat idled in midstream. It was a beautiful evening, with the sun still high enough in the sky to warm the air. A good thing, too, she thought. There was little or no warmth in the clothing she was wearing. She looked at Joshua's broad back and shoulders. He was tinkering with the engine, getting grease and oil on the cuffs of what was obviously a clean and fairly new shirt. He had shaved again. It really did take years off his age. Her heart was thumping uncomfortably beneath the red dress. She had set her heart on something happening tonight. She wanted to... No, she needed to feel some human affection. She needed some passion in her life. At this place and this time, what she needed was for Joshua McLaren to wake up and take notice of her as a woman, not as an object of scorn. She had played every card she had. She had practically forced him to take her out on the river, even though he had chosen an hour when he could be certain she would be at the house with her companions. She had simply said she didn't want any supper, and the fact that she was now very hungry was irrelevant. She had slid into the red dress that she knew he admired. She had sprayed herself with expensive perfume. And so far, what she had received in return, a view of his back as he messed around with the engine. Perhaps Nell was right. Perhaps she had picked the wrong target, and he really had no romance in his soul. At last he closed the engine cover and came back to sit beside her. He kicked open the throttle, grasped the tiller, and the bow of the boat lifted out of the water, leaping forward into the river. Speech was impossible. So that was to be it. A couple of circles at high speed, and she would be returned to the dock, drenched in spray and still frustrated. However, Joshua did not turn the boat in circles. He headed downstream and out of the mouth of the river onto the open waters of Lake Ontario. When they were clear of the river mouth, he slowed the engine. A totally new view greeted Evangeline. The lake was calm, disturbed only by the ripples of the boat's passage. Seagulls flew overhead, and the setting sun cast a red glow into the sky and onto the water. I thought we might go out to the island, Joshua said. Oh, yes, where is it? Out yonder, he pointed to a hummock of land. Unless you're in a hurry to get back. No, no hurry at all. Good. You're not cold, are you?
No.
Should she have said yes? If she said she was cold, perhaps he would put his arm around her. More likely, he would offer some hideous, smelly blanket from the bowels of the boat. It's a beautiful evening, she said.
Aye.
He didn't seem to have more to say, and concentrated on steering the boat and gazing at the horizon until they reached the island. He nosed the bow onto a stony beach and leaped easily ashore to tie the mooring rope to a tree. Come up into the bow, he said, and I'll help you down. She was lifted lightly to the ground, enjoying for the moment the feel of his hands at her waist. But then he turned and scrambled back on board the boat. He returned with a blanket and the picnic basket, which had been causing Danny so much merriment. Does this island have a name? She asked. We all know it as East Island, Joshua replied. He smiled. Perhaps when you're famous, they'll rename it for you. Murray's Island. First, I have to become famous, she reminded him. That won't be long now, will it? Less than 48 hours left. Well, Mother Nature is certainly giving me a good send-off. She chattered on and on, looking at his unsmiling face. Look at this beautiful evening and the lake and you being so kind to me. What do you have in the picnic basket, by the way? Oh, nothing much, just a wee bit of supper. Evangeline spread the blanket on the ground and seated herself gracefully, being careful to display a little more leg than was strictly necessary. He just stood there with the picnic basket, saying nothing, and showing no sign of wanting to sit beside her. "Jeremy and Frank were in town this afternoon," she said, for the sake of something to say. "They say it's like a circus." "It's been a circus for as long as I can remember," Joshua said. "Even when I was a wee lad, there was always something going on."
"You mean people riding the rapids and that sort of thing?"
"All sorts of things." He squatted down at the corner of the blanket, not quite committed to sharing her space. "Foreign princes, senators, diplomats. We've had tightrope walkers and stilt walkers and aerialists, all trying to beat the river."
"Did any of them succeed?" she asked.
Joshua edged a little more of his body onto the blanket. She held her breath. It was like taming a wild animal.
"Some of them succeeded," Joshua said. "The great Blondin, he was the best. He could walk that tightrope blindfold, backwards, and carrying a man on his back. You name it, he could do it. He came all the way from Paris just to beat the Niagara River."
"I wonder that John never brought us up here," Evangeline said. "He'd go anywhere he thought he could make a dishonest penny."
"You don't speak well of your late husband," Joshua commented.
"Why should I?" she retorted. "I have nothing good to say of him."
"Didn't you love him?"
Evangeline considered the question. Had she ever really loved John Murray? Or was she just looking for a man who would take her away from her humdrum island life?
"I suppose I loved him," she said eventually, "but I was only 17 years old, so what did I know of love? John was a handsome man. And that's what 17-year-old girls like. I thought I was the luckiest girl in the world."
"I think he was the lucky one," Joshua said softly, not really looking at her. She felt the blood rush to her cheeks. Was she making progress? Was Joshua going to help her to take her mind off the falls? She decided to make another stab at calling him by his first name.
"Why, thank you, Joshua," she said, as evenly as possible. "Now, please, let me see what you have in that picnic basket. I'm starving hungry." He opened the basket and, to her amazement, produced a bottle of scotch and two glasses.
"We should drink to the success of your voyage," he announced, "and that's worth using a little of the real stuff. I've no great liking for moonshine."
"Some of it's not too bad," Evangeline assured him.
The Canadian looked at her in the face, startled.
"You drink moonshine?" he said.
She sighed. She had shocked him again. Well, there was no point in pretending to be something she wasn't.
"I drink moonshine," she said. "I've led an interesting life, Joshua, not a sheltered one."
"Aye," he muttered. "I suppose you're what they call a woman of the world." They lapsed into an uncomfortable silence, listening to the call of the water birds as they settled down for the evening.
Evangeline raised her glass. "To the falls," she said.
"The falls," Joshua echoed, and downed his scotch in one gulp. He refilled his glass and turned to Evangeline.
"To you," he said, "a brave, bonny, but very foolish woman."
"I'll drink to that," said Evangeline. She threw back her head and swallowed the entire draft, the warmth of the smooth liquid spreading immediately through her body. It felt wonderful. She held out her glass and he refilled it, a surprised exclamation on his face.
"To the Maid of the Mist," she said, "the last virgin sacrifice."
"She was no sacrifice," Joshua corrected her.
"But that's not what Nell said," Evangeline protested.
"Nell doesn't know everything," Joshua said. "Some stories are not appropriate for someone like Nell, a spinster. Leela Walla, you see, she wasn't sacrificed. She jumped."
"More fool her," said Evangeline carelessly. "And why shouldn't Nell know about that?"
"It's not a story for ladies," McLaren said.
"We've already established that I'm not a lady," said Evangeline. "I'm a woman of the world, remember? So tell me the story."
3 times she was married, and 3 times her husband died right when... He stopped suddenly, looking as though he wished he'd never started.
"Right when what?" Evangeline asked.
"Right when... Well, you know,
Well, on their wedding night, Joshua stammered.
She must have been quite a woman, Evangeline said.
No, no, a flush spread across the riverman's clean-shaven face,
and he seemed unable to look her in the eye.
She'd been cursed, you see.
Obviously, Evangeline retorted, enjoying his discomfort.
It must have been very frustrating for her. She was probably expecting to enjoy her wedding night.
He looked at her in amazement. Do you think so? He asked.
Oh my goodness, Evangeline thought. What on earth was his wife like?
Did he really have no idea that a woman could actually enjoy herself in bed? Joshua stumbled on, looking anywhere but at her face. An old woman of her tribe had cursed her, so they say, for her laziness. And this snake had crawled up her skirt and into her, and every time she tried to, the snake would... He stopped, unable to continue. Evangeline laughed out loud. This was not the way she had expected the conversation to go, but it was at least going in the right direction.
Well, she said, I don't blame her for jumping over the falls. I'm glad I never had that problem.
But the thunder gods rescued her, Joshua continued, and told her what was wrong. And when they returned her, she was all right, he concluded lamely. He hastily refilled his glass and gulped the entire contents again. Evangeline took pity on his embarrassment and leaned across to look into the picnic basket. I'm sure there's more to that story, but don't worry about it right now. What else is in this basket?
Just a few sandwiches, he said,
obviously relieved to be rid of the subject of Lilawala and the snake. The sandwiches were sorry-looking things. Definitely not Nell McLaren's handiwork.
Did you make these yourself? Evangeline asked, strangely touched at the idea of Joshua in the kitchen trying to make dainty sandwiches. He'd even attempted, not very successfully, to cut off the crusts.
She had a sudden feeling that what was happening between them was no longer a game. There were emotions here, deep emotions. She wasn't sure she was ready for deep emotion. She wasn't ready for her heart to be skipping beats and feeling tears welling up as she thought of Joshua's lonely life. Did she have the right to open up his damned feelings? She nibbled on a sandwich. They're very good, she reassured him. Are you sure you don't have some little woman helping you?
No, he said. No little woman to help me. I've been alone for a long time.
Too long, Evangeline said.
He ducked his head. I'm sorry, he said. I shouldn't be doing this.
Evangeline took another swallow of the scotch and leaned forward. It was now or never, and never was becoming more and more unacceptable.
Don't be sorry, she said. I'm not sorry.
She removed the glass from his hand and set it down carefully on the blanket. He stretched out a nervous hand and touched her face. He moved closer. She found that she could hardly breathe. Even with John, it had never felt like this. She had set out to conquer this man, but as he gathered her into his arms, she realized that she was the one that was being conquered. She forgot about John. She forgot about her children. And she even forgot about the falls and Beryl as she gave herself up to his work, hardened hands, and fierce kisses.